call to order this meeting on
Environment and Water. Good morning. And we're going to begin today with a measure introduction. We need to be in work session for that.
Yes.
Okay, so I will open a work session for the purpose of measure introduction. And we have an LC, so this would be a committee bill, members, and it's LC 199. It is at the dais. It is a very narrow tweak to the field burning bill that we passed last session. It changes the boundaries in Linn County, and the change is on page 2. The bill is several pages, but the only particularly relevant part, I believe, is in page 2. We haven't taken testimony on this. I don't have a position on this bill, but it was requested by the Farm Bureau initially, and the Speaker's office was okay with it. I've been in discussion with Representative Holby, we are sort of green-lighted to move forward at least with the bill introduction and then see where we land in terms of, you know, testimony and committee action. So I would take a motion to introduce LC 199.
So moved.
Representative Jensen moves the introduction of LC 199 as a committee bill. Is there any discussion? Any objection? Seeing none, the motion carries. LC 199 will be a committee bill. And we will close that work session and open a work session on House Bill 3613, the offshore oil and natural gas ban. And you have an amendment, members, in your packets. It's a dash 2 amendment. This responds to the some of the testimony that we heard related to putting a sunset on this moratorium, or I suppose in one person's words, changing it from a ban to a moratorium. Responds to the conversations I've had with members, both parties, both chambers, and I think represents a kind of middle course with respect to the sunset. There will be advocates for the ban, including me, who believe that this, you know, putting a 10-year sunset on the bill weakens it. I'm reluctant to do so, but understand that in this short session, with the kind of timelines that we're under, in the interest of generating, you know, as much support as possible and really moving forward in a bipartisan way, I am urging the committee to adopt the dash 2 amendments, which would sunset the ban in 2020. Representative Smith.
Representative Barnhart and I have an amendment that we have yet to draft for a 150-year sunset that we'd like to put in. If we could have leave.
150-year sunset.
We could negotiate down to 147.
Okay.
It would be fine.
All right. Well,
in more seriousness, I'll go along with what the chair wants. My own bias is that things that are hard to get rid of, particularly merit a sunset more than things that are less hard to get rid of. And what I mean by that, so when we did the sunset on tax credits, it takes 31 votes to add a tax credit, it takes 36 votes to get rid of them. You add to that the fact that anytime you try to get rid of a particular tax credit, the people who are trying to get rid of it might not care that much about the existence of it, but the people who benefit by it will mount every ounce of relationship they have to preserve it. Something like this, my own view is if there is a sniff of a major oil reserve off our coast, and or if there is a major oil crisis, any ban or moratorium we have will be worth only slightly more than the paper on which it is printed. And so it would not be that hard to remove. So, you know, I'll go along with whatever sunset you want, I suppose, but as long as it's no less than 147 years.
Thank you, Representative Smith. Any other discussion, or I suppose we could take a motion. Representative Benson.
Just as a remark, I think in building on Representative Smith's remarks, the fact of the matter is the ban could be stopped at any time, changed at any time. So the real question is, why are we doing it? And the answer is to send a signal that we all believe that the Oregon coast is worth protecting, and I think that would be a unanimous vote that it's worth protecting. So the real question is, what is it that this ban adds to that body of regulation that already exists to protect that most valuable resource? And the answer is not much, and Representative Smith just said that. So my question really should be, why are we doing this at all? I think I recall from the remarks made by Representative Boone in discussing how long it took to put in a get the regulatory pieces out of the road that exist preventing wave energy generating devices. It took something like 6 months or a year to try to wind our way through the thicket of regulation that we've created, just for wave energy devices, which I think we all think are probably pretty good ideas. Think for a moment of the type of work it would take to put a drill rig off our beautiful coast. I think we heard someone from the Brian Doherty, I believe, say it would take 10 years. So, I think I had indicated to the chair previous to this meeting that I would follow the lead of the Coastal Caucus, at least the members I've spoken with, and they would be okay with the, quote, ban, end quote, for 4 years. And the theory being that we would, again, look at it carefully in light of whatever difficulties might face our nation or our state. So the record is clear. I think the ban is just like Representative Smith said, a little wishful thinking, but I would support a four-year moratorium.
Thank you for the comments, Representative Benz. Representative Boone.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And everybody knows that I would support a total ban forever, because in part of what the industry has indicated too, and also the past history that we have with the state. And we do have an off-ramp in it if there's a crisis or anything, but as far as anybody knows now, there's probably about 3 days worth of oil off our coast and may or may not be worth the money spent to explore it. And having said all that, I firmly believe that Oregon is paving the way to making great inroads in offshore and underwater tidal and wave energy resources, and our state is being watched all around the world, and there's limited amount of real estate to develop such energy resources in the United States, and Oregon is the one most are focusing on at present. So I think that's where we should put our emphasis. And I'm sorry, I have a cold, so my brain is trying to catch up here, but I have a thought, and
you're
I'm trying
fine.
To say it.
You're doing fine.
I think that this is it. In addition to having some meat in it, it does have the biggest piece of it is the message that we believe in our state as being one of the pioneers in this new sector of the renewable energy world. I think I said what I wanted to say, but thanks.
Representative Barnhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm in favor of the ban. I think the answer to Representative Bent's argument is really quite simple. The ban would require an additional step to any other steps that would be taken in order to do oil and gas exploration off the coast, and that would be a visit through the legislature. And I think that's very appropriate given the value of that resource.
Representative Thompson.
I guess I may as well weigh in. I would prefer to see a moratorium as opposed to a ban. I think a ban sends the wrong message about our willingness to participate in future technologies should they develop. A moratorium simply puts sideboards on it, and we can, we will come back and visit it again in the future. I think I would prefer the 10-year ban as a as the median between 0 and 147. I have no problem with 10 years because that's, I'm not expecting miraculous technology. But things may change in 10 years. We may have whole new drilling techniques. We may find another 2 days of oil off the Oregon coast. And these things are all worthy, I think, of another look.
Thank you, Representative Thompson. Representative Jensen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm hearing this morning a lot of what I would really perceive as wasted words in relationship to a prohibiting the development of oil, et cetera, off of the Oregon coast. I do agree with Representative Smith that the ban, if circumstances so dictate, would not be worth the effort that we're putting out here today on it. There are a lot of, sources of potential energy, and many of those sources are being pursued yet in this country, but as it stands right now, gas and oil are the two principal sources of energy that we have, with possibly the exception of nuclear. I guess if I were going to have my way, I would be somewhat happy to support a ban on the development of gas off the Oregon coast if we were accompanying it with a proposal to seek and develop the nuclear energy more in the state of Oregon. But in general, I am willing to compromise a little bit and allow or vote for this bill with some very small period of time, or perhaps the period of time that was mentioned forever. And I, somewhere along the line, and I'd have to bow to my three colleagues here that have legal training, but contracts are things that are, you know, forever, are not viewed very enforceable as far as the courts are concerned. You know, it might be nice just to have it forever so that the courts could throw the whole thing out and we could spend some more attorney money arguing this in court. A lot of discussion on, you know, this bill, I would hope if we're going to move it forward, we move it forward with a relatively short period of time in it rather than some longer period of time. Although I would have to admit I would probably hold my nose in voting yes for any period of time.
Thank you, Representative Jensen. Any additional comments, Representative Smith?
I just wanted to correct for the record, when I stated that I think that the ban would be worth less, what I really mean is the difference between a ban and a moratorium, where the existence or lack of a sunset, I think, would be not particularly the driving element if circumstances changed meaningfully. And I think Representative Barnhart made the point that if you're going to go through various hoops to build oil rigs off the Oregon coast, which is one of a treasure that not only is important to Oregonians, but is something we hold in stewardship for the entire world, is one of the most beautiful places in the world, I think visiting this legislature is not a terrible step to take.
Well said. Representative Boone.
I got to say, I appreciate Representative Bence's comments. It's hard to get a comment out of him, and he's kind of like when so-and-so talks, everybody listens.
Yes.
So maybe we could cut a deal with you. We won't drill over on your east side if you won't drill on our west side.
he'd like it.
He'd be all for it.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Boone, I think that is a very, very correct remark. Not that people listen when I talk, but the part about the east side, west side. It seems to me that the proper thing for those of us from the east side to do is listen carefully to you folks on the coast, which I've done. I went to Representative Krieger and I said, "What do you want, Wayne?" I also listened to you because you're on the coast, and also the other folks that live there. And I believe that you, although you can't speak for the entire state, certainly deserve greater weight when you speak, because you actually have to look across the ocean every day. I only drive over there once a year and look at it. So, my point is, though, that's why when you ask for the moratorium slash ban, I'm supportive. But I also know that the entire state is going to be relying upon those wind towers that are now blessing my beautiful view shed. Whatever happens on your coast does affect the rest of the state, so we have to weigh in. But to lock things down permanently, as a lawyer, I know what the rule of perpetuity stands for, and it means that nothing's permanent. And to think that that we, as a group of folks, can rule from our legislative graves into 150 years into the future is a bit, it's way beyond wishful thinking. So my thought is, why don't we measure what we're about in terms of reality? And I think that the terms in this case would be 4 years.
What did I tell you? The place would drop a pin in here.
It's an interesting discussion. I mean, I think the question of moratorium. Someone proposed to me that everything we do should have a moratorium or sunset on it, and I suppose there are some who would like that. I think we do send a somewhat different message by adopting a bill with a 2 or 4 year sunset than we do with a bill with a 20 or 25 year sunset, as was proposed by some folks from the coast who understood that we may need to put a sunset on this to get it done. I, like Representative Benz, have been in touch not only with Representative Boone, but with other members of the Coastal Caucus. I do take my cues on this issue from them. They're the most directly affected. 10 years appeared to be the place that I think that the sort of meeting ground of positions on this, and I hope that's the way that we can move forward. In terms of why to do it, I agree with a lot of what's been said here. I would look back to history. This ban moratorium was originally adopted by the Oregon legislature in the late 1980s or early 1990s after there was a move by the federal government to open up not the territorial sea but the farther offshore areas to leasing for oil and natural gas exploration. And this state was doing everything possible to send the message to the federal government that we did not want that to happen. And one of the tools, one of the several tools that we had to send that message was a vote, and I think it was unanimous or practically unanimous out of the Oregon legislature in support of a ban on drilling in our territorial sea. Today, we're just a year, 2 years past a decision again by the federal government to consider the leasing of that farther offshore area for oil and natural gas exploration. This, again, can be part of our arsenal to show the federal government that we're skeptical at best about the value of that for Oregon's industries and Oregon's livability. So, I think history is one thing. I think the message that this sends related to renewable energy development is really important. This gives people like Representative Boone, who are working with the wave energy sector, something else to talk about when she's trying to attract those companies to Oregon, to say, look, this legislature has made a commitment that renewable energy will be the primary renewable resources. It's the highest value economic activity off the Oregon coast, fishing, crabbing, and potentially wave and other forms of ocean energy. So I think there are good reasons to do this, and am sort of reluctantly able to get to this 10-year moratorium as a kind of middle ground. Representative Jensen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm trying to be a little more serious about this than perhaps I was a moment ago. I find the discussion about the east side and the west side extremely interesting. And I hear the discussion here about the folks on the coast don't want to look out on the pristine work of nature there and see these money-making devices protruding out of the water, ruining their view. I look back a couple of years in our legislation, my career here at the legislature, and have seen in this building and across the eastern part of the state an incredible love affair with wind energy.
And admitting, of course, that there are some people in Eastern Oregon who find this, you know, to have been very good. And in fact, there are some companies around the world that have found this to be good, as we've seen in the newspapers and on TV. All of the money that the state of Oregon has given away in the form of tax credits for people to develop wind energy. For those of you who drive up and down I-84 from here to my home district of Pendleton, you will note, especially on the west, driving west, a number of these wind energy things sticking up out of the ground. And I would submit what an incredible introduction to the beauties of the Columbia River Gorge for tourists from other parts of the world as they see all these things, which in fact look like crosses a lot of the time, because they're not generating energy, and they don't if there isn't wind blowing. And at the present time, in my district, I'm getting a lot of email and a lot of concern from citizens in the northeastern part of my district about wind energy and how it will hurt the view of the Blue Mountains as you approach and look out across the prairies into the mountains. And I quite frankly am somewhat perplexed by this. We want to save the view for one side, but it's okay on the other side to corrupt the view. And I tend to be more or less sympathetic with the development of energy. I tend to be, I think, sympathetic with the development of our natural resources. But I do have some problem with some of this, because energy is critical to the growth of the state of Oregon. And I do know that there are some people who are not for growth, period. And that's an okay sort of position to have. Not one that I share, but it's an okay position to have. So I see a real parallel here in the, in the argument or the debate between whether we should have oil development off the Oregon coast and whether we should have wind power development on the east side of the state. Of course, the people in my district who oppose this do advance the argument, let us determine where. And of course, that is not the way the siting thing typically tends to go. So you're presenting me with a dilemma this morning, I guess, as far as where and how we go about the energy development.
Representative Jensen, I would suggest that it looks a little different. And in fact, this bill allows the people on the coast, or helps the people on the coast, have a conversation about the development of renewable energy, which will raise those issues, are raising those issues, related to potential interference between renewable energy and fishing, potential view sites that get changed because of buoys that are 30, 40 feet out of the water. I mean, that's a conversation that the coast is having, and this bill helps them have it. What it says is that what we don't want is the towers that crowd the ports that result in potential spills, other contamination. But I think that conversation about renewable energy, including its impact on views, is very much going on and will continue to as a result of this bill. Representative Barnhart and Boone first.
And I appreciate your comments, Representative Jensen. Just want to clarify something. I don't have an objection to the view part of the windmills, and I might have on your side too. I mean, I understand that. As a matter of fact, in my district, there's a company that is very seriously looking at a wind project offshore, and what we're trying to do there in addressing the view part that some of the constituency doesn't like, just like on your side, is to, the farther offshore they can get them, the, you know, because of the curve of the earth and your view, unless you're up in a plane, that you wouldn't see them in that sense. And the part of that that's been difficult is the cost per mile to move offshore for the cabling. And lo and behold, the Swedes have come up with a new design that is making that probably, look at, he's laughing, probably going to make it a lot more possible to move it further offshore where they'd like it to be, so that the view issue isn't an issue. But I understand that. But I think Cannon talked about it. My purpose is to not be against it in that sense, but to be more for something else. And what I'd like to be for and promote is the renewable energy sources. I hope that clarifies that.
Thank you. Representative Bernhardt, did you have a comment?
I did, but it's been said, so I'll pass.
Well, I know what will happen if this discussion continues. We'll start talking about line 8, section 1, and this committee will keep working and working and working the bill. I am hopeful that we will, in fact, move the bill, and I would welcome a motion on the amendment. I don't think you want to make that motion.
No, you're right.
Anybody else want to make a different motion? Representative Thompson?
On the 10-year amendment?
Yes, on the dash 2s.
Okay, I would move that we adopt an amendment to put a 10-year moratorium on this bill.
Okay, so Representative Thompson moves the dash 2 amendments,
dash
which
two,
you
yes.
have in your packets. There has been quite a bit of discussion. Any further? Seeing none.
so enthusiastic.
Please call the roll.
Representative Bailey?
Aye.
Representative Barnhart?
No.
Representative Bent?
Aye.
Representative Boone?
Aye.
Representative Thompson?
Aye.
Vice Chair Smith?
No.
Vice Chair Jensen?
Aye.
Chair Cannon?
Aye. Motion carries. The dash 2s are amended into 3613. And I take a motion on the bill. Representative Bernhardt.
Mr. Chair, I move that we send House Bill, 3613, to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Bernhardt moves House Bill 3613 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any additional discussion? Representative Benz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm going to vote for this to get it to the floor, and just as I voted for the 10-year instead of the 4. And so with that qualification, ready to vote.
Thanks. Sue, will you call the roll?
Representative Bailey?
Aye.
Representative Barnhart?
Aye.
Representative Benz?
Aye.
Representative Boone?
Aye.
Representative Thompson?
Aye.
Vice Chair Smith?
Aye.
Vice Chair Jensen?
Aye.
Chair Cannon?
Aye. Motion carries. May all our work be so productive this short session, and House Bill 3613 goes to the floor. I will close the work session on 3613. Oh, I will carry it, yes. I'll close the work session on 3613. I see some of the right folks in the room to open a public hearing on House Bill 3606. Justin Martin. And I think this may have come up here before you had a chance to sign up, Palmer. So why don't you come on up along with anyone else? Yeah.
No.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Justin Martin. I'm here today on behalf of Thompson, who is associated with the RCA brand, in full support of House Bill 3606. Don't really have much new information since the last time we met, 2-3 weeks ago, but did want to continue to let the committee know that we are working hand-in-hand with DEQ, and we've actually been working quite hard on getting some language in front of the committee. We did have an industry-wide conference call. There were some positives that came out of that, and I think Palmer will go into, Mr. Mason will go into a little more detail about that. But again, I think our objectives with this legislation is, one, to get to what the 2007 legislation actually intended, and two, spread a little more of the responsibility through the market share system, which 13 or 14 other states currently do. So with that, certainly turn it over to Palmer, but let folks know here that we are in full support, and we'll continue to work to get that language in front of you, and I'm really itching to kind of be able to come and visit with you and try to get some yeses and get this to your colleagues on the floor. So thank you for that opportunity, and we appreciate you seeing us again.
Thanks, Justin.
Chair Cannon, members of the committee, my name is Palmer Mason. I'm with the Department of Environmental Quality. Thank you for having us here today. I think Justin's right. We're going to go and describe briefly some of the issues that we've seen with the present law and maybe the need to change it and why changes would be positive. I want to commend Justin and Thompson and most of the other TV manufacturers for talking to us about the need to make some changes. We're still working with them on what those changes would be exactly, so I do want to tell you the bill as drafted is more of a placeholder. We need an amendment to make the language right and to do what we all intend to do here, but we are working with the other stakeholders to try to do that. So I've also have with me Loretta Pickerel, who is the solid waste policy manager at DEQ and has been involved in the e-waste program from the beginning and is very familiar with the current operations of the program and some of the issues that we're seeing that give rise to the need for this bill. And she's going to go through that with you. So thank you for your time, and we'll take any questions as necessary.
Thank you. My name is Loretta Pickerel. I'm a solid waste manager for DEQ. Just a brief background. The Oregon's electronic product stewardship legislation requires manufacturers to fund a program to provide free recycling of computers, monitors, and TVs in Oregon. And manufacturers must pay a registration fee to participate in the state contractor-run program or join an independent manufacturer program which pays its own cost. Every year, the department assigns a return share to each manufacturer in the state, and that is the percentage of that manufacturer's computers, monitors, or TVs that come through the recycling system. All recycling programs must collect computers, monitors, and TVs year-round statewide, but generally they design their programs to try to collect the total return shares of all manufacturers in their programs. And in fact, the independent manufacturer programs must collect at least this to avoid penalties. DEQ also uses return shares to calculate the recycling fees of the manufacturers in the state contractor program, but we do so differently for TV and for the other we call IT manufacturers. The TV manufacturers are those that collect more TVs than monitors and computers. The IT manufacturers pay their collective share of the state contractors program's recycling costs based on their return shares, but the TV manufacturers pay their collective share of those costs based on their market share. That is the respective percentage of the annual sales of all TV manufacturers in the state. Under this scheme, then, you see that the TV manufacturers with market shares, that's those currently selling TVs, pay the recycling costs for all the TV manufacturers in the state contractor program. The former TV manufacturers in that program, who are no longer selling TVs, pay no fees, even though they have return shares they bring to that program. DEQ has made this fee system work for the past 2 years, but as TV manufacturers have realized that they run a serious risk of paying significantly higher fees in the state contractor program than they would have to pay if they joined a manufacturer program, they've joined manufacturer programs, not surprisingly. As a result, most TV manufacturers with market share are now in manufacturer-run programs. And you'll see in Table 1 of the testimony on page 2 the sharp decline in market share in the state contractor program. For 2011, TV manufacturers in the state contractor program will have only 3% of the TV market share statewide. And to put that in context, those manufacturers will have 3% of market share, but will be responsible for paying for 27% of all the recycling costs for TV manufacturers. In contrast, The manufacturer programs will have 97% of market share, but they will be responsible for paying only 73% of the total return shares for TV manufacturers.
Can I ask a point of clarification? Where do you get that 26 or 27% figure from? I understand the 3% market share versus 97% market share in one program or the other. How does that why is that 3% paying 26% of the program rather than 3% of the total costs?
Because it really is, you get at the crux of the problem with the statute, yeah. Representative Cannon. The TV manufacturers that join the state contractor program come with their total return share obligation. And the TV manufacturers in the state contractor program have 27% of the return shares of all TV manufacturers in the state. So the TV manufacturers in that program are responsible for paying for 27% of those recycling costs. The other TV manufacturers, the 97% that have 97% of market share, they've all joined another program. They've taken their return shares with them, and those return shares total 73% of all return shares statewide.
Okay. So the 26% that's in your testimony is their return share.
Yes.
And therefore, they are expected to pay for a program that collects 26%. They're expected to come up with 26% of the cost of operating these two programs.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Now, given these projections, the following is the likely scenario for the state contractor program for 2011 under the current fee structure. Too few manufacturers with market share will remain in the state contractor program to be able to cover the entire TV manufacturer's share of recycling costs in that program. The manufacturer in the state contractor program that has the largest market share for 2011 has only 1.9% of the TV market share statewide that will pay for 74% of all TV manufacturers' costs in the state contractor program. That will be a fee of $780,000 for 2.5 million pounds of recycling. There are 10 other manufacturers in the state contractor program with market share totaling 1.1% of market share statewide. They'll pay $270,000 collectively to cover the remaining recycling costs in the state contractor program for the TV manufacturers. There are 19 TV manufacturers in the state contractor program who have no market share, so pay no fees. But almost half of the return shares of all TV manufacturers in the state contractor program are assigned to those TV manufacturers with no market share, who will then pay no fees to cover those costs. If DEQ determines that it will be unable to collect sufficient fees to cover the TV manufacturer's share of recycling costs in 2011, we'll likely need to scale back the state contractor program significantly to collect only the total return shares assigned to the IT manufacturers and to the TV manufacturers who have market share and thus do owe fees. The law does not appear to allow us to require the IT manufacturers in the state contractor program to cover the TV manufacturer's share of recycling costs in that program, and we cannot incur debt that we do not have funds to pay for. Oregonians, since Oregonians are likely to collect the same number of TVs next year, regardless of who are likely to recycle the same number of TVs next year, regardless of who collects them, if the state contractor program does reduce collection volumes as suggested, all programs in the state will collect more. And both the IT and TV manufacturers in all programs will be paying for the recycling costs that should be paid for by TV manufacturers in the state contractor program. We estimate they'll pay about $500,000 to recycle 1.5 million pounds of electronics to cover those additional pounds for the assigned to TV manufacturers that won't be paying fees. Moreover, the IT manufacturers collectively will pay disproportionately more than their assigned share of recycling than will TV manufacturers. So the net result is if we don't correct this fee structure, which the TV manufacturers requested, the TV sector will gain at the expense of the IT sector, even though that was not the legislative intent. We have identified a couple potential solutions to this problem. The first is a very simple solution, which will be to authorize DEQ to assess recycling fees to TV manufacturers based on return share in the same way they now assess fees to IT manufacturers. The second amendment is an amendment some manufacturers have urged, which could also fix the problem. And that would be to amend the law to specify that the total recycling rate weight assigned to all TV manufacturers in the state be allocated among TV manufacturers based on their market share. And then we could continue to assess fees for the TV manufacturers in the state contractor program based on market share as well. The real problem is that we assign recycling obligations in one way based on return share, and we then assess fees in the state contractor program only based on market share. That's the real crux of the problem here. With that, I conclude my statements, but I'm open to questions.
All right, let's see. I know this is really complicated. I mean, I worked very closely in the development of the 2007 legislation. I led the work group that produced, you know, what was close to consensus language for the electronics waste program. We talked about market share and return share a lot. There were amendments proposed to the committee, including an amendment we adopted that I think created the problem that you're describing. And I still find myself struggling to make sense of this. Is it your impression that that this was a mistake? That this was I won't say a drafting error, but a mistake that we did not we created this market share approach for television manufacturers at the request of some of the legacy television manufacturers who were concerned about assessing fees based on return share, since some of them aren't even producing TVs anymore, but theirs would be coming in a lot. And they said, "How are we going to pay for it? We don't manufacture TVs anymore, but ours will be the ones coming into the system." So they advocated for market share. And we adopted that amendment. Is it your impression or understanding that we simply failed to adopt the right amendment to do what it was that they were hoping we would do?
Representative Cannon, we've looked at the legislative history. I think here's what was going on. We talked about the state contractor program and the possibility of having manufacturer programs. But I think in people's minds, at least the testimony seems to indicate, people were thinking that all the TV manufacturers would be in the state contractor program, and then the fee structure would work. But the statute doesn't require that, and that hasn't been the result. Some of the TV manufacturers may see it differently. Some of them think that what they were trying to do is what the second option I laid out was. They thought they were assigning the return shares to all TV manufacturers statewide and then reallocating that based on market share. But that's not the way the statute was written. So I think it was an error in drafting. The question is, what was the real intent? You know, it seemed like on the one hand, if all the TV manufacturers were in the state contractor program, this scheme would work. That is what I see the legislative language, the history and the testimony really indicating was what people were thinking at the time. But the statute doesn't support that.
I think that was the intent, and that was perhaps the expectation that all TV manufacturers would be in the state contractor program. The intent was to protect the legacy TV manufacturers, the ones who were producing TVs 25, 30, 40 years ago, but are no longer producing many TVs today, to protect them from paying the full costs of a program. There was a lot of debate about that, and in fact, I was one of two no votes on the committee on the amendment that went to market share, because I thought, well, sorry, it is your product that's coming into the eCycles program, therefore you should be paying for it. They said, no, the people who are selling TVs today should be paying for it. Market share. That was the debate. I guess my question is, if we adopt, say, version 2, which Thompson has proposed, or something, you know, something like what we have now in the bill, are we going to hear opposition to that? I mean, there's no one else, as far as I know, signed up to testify. Can we proceed down this path, Justin, and feel like we've done good by the television industry of America, of the world?
Well, Mr. Chair and members of the committee, I don't know if I can speak to that specific question you just asked, but I can speak to, we would be supportive of that second option. Obviously, as Ms. Pickerell talked about, that is our view of what happened and the intent that we were trying to get at in 2007. I would say, I think it's safe to say, we've had two hearings. We have not seen opposition in the building. We had a good conference call with a majority of the industry who can get to where we need to be. A couple of those players agree with the concept of market share, but are looking to do more during this opportunity. I think we all realize within the constraints of this supplemental session, that might just be impossible to get to. So the easy answer is support for the second version that you see on the testimony in front of you. A majority of the industry is there, as is Thompson.
And if we went with the first option that DEQ has proposed, that comes from them, not you. Where are you on that?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, we could not support that first option.
Okay.
And if I may, Representative Cannon, I mean, I think you know this. DEQ can support either option. We laid out the first, you know, taking everybody in the TV world to return share as a sort of a simpler, cleaner right. approach. But market share is something that we can do. There again, recycling obligations and recycling fees for TVs in the state contractor program would all be based on market share, as well as if you do your own independent program, right. and we can support that. There are a couple of issues that we would like to talk to, and we have talked to Thompson and the other TV manufacturers in this committee about if we do market share, and that is, just to put them out on the record for the sake of the committee's consideration, is this market share data is not inexpensive. It costs money for DEQ to buy, because we would need to have sales data for what the manufacturers are doing. And that information is sometimes apples and oranges. It isn't always, it comes from different sources, and they don't always look at devices in the same way. So we may even need some requirements in the statute for an individual manufacturer to supply us organ-specific information so that we can make a proper assessment of what their true market share is. And to do that, we might need some fee revenue to support that. This is all things that we've talked to Thompson and the other TV manufacturers, so I don't think it comes as a surprise, but I just want the committee to know that.
Okay. Any other questions? All right, well, we will proceed. I think my sense, especially despite the fact that I supported in 2007 something that looks like your simpler version one, we did, the committee did adopt, and it was just Representative Burley and I who voted no. It was one of those, you know, there wasn't a political thing. It was just trying to understand how this works and make the best decision for the industry. It doesn't really affect the consumer at all. But we, despite having voted no on market share back in 2007, I am inclined to try to move forward on the path with least resistance for the industry, since this really only affects them. And at this point, anyway, there's only one lobbyist testifying and for the industry, and he's testifying in favor of this number two, so it would seem that is the path of least resistance. But we'll see what we hear. Okay. All right. With that, there is no one else here to testify on the bill. Let's close the public hearing on House Bill 3606. And before I close the committee, Beth, I would just want to confirm that we can post for bills today, but post, and they'll still be, we'll be able to hear them and move them next week.
Yes.
That's right. Okay. There was a lot of carrying over in healthcare yesterday, the way we started to when we got close to the deadlines last session. It began to make me nervous about bills.
No, we're good. They probably have more bills.
They definitely have more bills. Yeah. Okay. And with that, we will close the committee. Thank you.